Fairly often when we are talking about the future of planet Earth in one way or another, I am almost certain to get 5, 8, 12 WhatsApps from listeners saying, why don't we talk about the elephant in the room? Why don't we talk about the fact that the globe's population is exploding? And my instinctive response is many of the problems that the Earth faces are not down to large populations in countries like Nigeria. They are more down to the overuse of Earth's resources among the wealthy populations of places like America and Finland and France. And I've been reading recently some work which leads me to think that maybe there's some evidentiary justification for my instinctual stance. Anton Cartwright is an economist and researcher at the African Center for Cities. And Anton, good afternoon. You contributed to a bit of research by the Inclusive Society Institute into global sustainable population. And that tells us that we can sustain a greater number of people on planet Earth than some of the doomsayers might put forward?
Well, good afternoon, John. And yes, you're right. This does seem to be an old chestnut of a topic. And it was a delight as an economist to be able to get to grips with it, because as you said in your intro, this issue almost always bubbles up. It's in our economic models. It's in our environmental models. And it was great to be able to get sort of inside the black box and actually interrogate the issue. And yes, I mean, broadly, our findings were threefold. One is, I mean, and this is news to some people, so that, you know, fertility rates are really falling around the world, even in Africa. They're falling precipitously. And so, you know, some of the models which project massive populations of 20 billion people, that's just not going to happen. We'll probably top out somewhere just over 11 billion people, having just gone past 8 billion. And then to your point, yes, it is true that at current kind of current economic models and the way we satisfy our needs and our wants currently, our economies do cause a lot of environmental damage. And if we were to carry on like this, we could probably only sustain around somewhere between 6 and 7 billion people on this planet. But our central point is that it needn't be that way, that there are at hand ready alternatives. And you don't have to make major changes to unlock those alternatives, which would allow a population of up to potentially 18 billion. Not that we'll ever get to 18 billion, but the planet could support 18 billion. And then, as you said, yes, that was our conclusion as well, that really very often the finger of blame is pointed at fast-growing populations in quite poor African countries, but our evidence certainly suggests that the bulk of the environmental damage, when one scratches beneath the surface and looks at greenhouse gas emissions and water resources, falls on the high consumers. That's high consumers in affluent countries and also high consumers in poor countries, but, you know, an elite layer of people who consume a lot. So, yes.
I mean, it's not great for a country like Nigeria that has that many people, because the absence of the kind of technologies which are everywhere in the developed Western or developed countries in other parts of the world, other than just the West, the technologies to feed those people, to transport those people, to give those people a basic quality of life are absent in those countries with very large, poor populations. So it's, you know, it's not as if it's not an issue, but it's not an issue in terms of the long-term health. Well, it's not that significant an issue in terms of the long-term health of the planet.
I think we our research agrees with that. And actually, our research broke the planet down into seven regions, the seven sort of UN regions, if you like, for which we have reasonably good data. And it was a sort of model-intensive piece of research. And interestingly, the model did show that currently, yes, there are more people in sub-Saharan Africa than, for example, we can feed with the food production in sub-Saharan Africa. But actually, that's not such a difficult problem to solve. In Africa, we produce just 1.4 tons of cereal per hectare. Compare that to North America, where they produce 7.2 tons of cereal per hectare. And, you know, it's not that difficult with some technology transfers, with some investment, to up that 1.4 to levels in which there'd be more than enough food to feed the African population. And so this idea of carrying capacity, which is an idea that we worked with a lot in the research, yes, maybe at the moment there are too many people in countries like Nigeria for the carrying capacity, but that carrying capacity can be quite easily altered. Compare that to the situation in Europe where the primary constraint is actually land area. That's a very difficult thing to change. You know, you can't expand the land area. They're kind of operating at the threshold of what their population can support. And so there are these, I think, quite interesting regional nuances in a conversation that, as you said in your intro, very often gets kind of plunked into broader debates.
You know, so I mean, the way that people are crammed together in some of the informal settlements around Cape Town is not a population issue. It's a governance issue. It's a land issue. It's a housing issue. It's all sorts of other issues. It's not got to do with the number of people who are being born. So what is the most productive way to have a look at the number of people on Earth and what they are using and how they are using it?
Yeah, it's a great question, one we grappled with a lot. It's one of these areas of research which seems to be the more research is produced, the less consensus there is. You know, literally the estimates range from half a billion to a trillion. That's quite a wide range when you do a literature review. What we did is we looked at five parameters: food, water, energy, land, and just behavior, which is really much to do with your governance point. But we try to make sure that these parameters interacted with each other. We didn't assume to know which of these would become binding on population first. And so we put them together and we took the basic requirements for 12 megajoules of calories per person per day, roughly 2,000 calories per person per day. There are some absolutes which you have to satisfy. And then we said, well, you know, what's the best we could do if we reconfigured those parameters? And one of the very interesting things that came out of it, and I guess this is quite close to some of my other research, is how we organize and build and arrange ourselves in cities and urban spaces. And a lot of these rapidly, where the population is growing fast, these often rapidly urbanizing countries as well. How we build cities, how we organize ourselves in cities is crucial. Where we get it right, we can make people better off and healthier, and we can free up conservation land, ecosystems outside of the city to do the very important work that sustains all of us. Of course, that's not the default. The default is that we sort of do slum urbanism, and that has both human and environmental damages. But we can quite sustainably build our cities to accommodate 120 people per hectare. And if we get that right, all sorts of other environmental issues kind of solve themselves, because there's land and there's space and there's nature which can then rehabilitate itself and sustain us.
Anton, thank you very, very much. Lots of food for thought in that. Anton Cartwright is an economist and a researcher at the African Center for Cities. And the research to which he was referring was research that he was the lead researcher doing it for the Inclusive Society Institute Research into Global Sustainable Population.